Shall we wait? No. Well, actually half a minute. Ah ja, da kommt der Max. Gut. Die anderen beiden sind auch am Anrücken, oder? Noch nicht. Sie kommen gleich. Okay. Let's wait for one second. Five seconds. Okay, let's continue. So, you see that this difference in mass, in sign, leads to the fact that the mass will become smaller as the temperature grows. Yeah, you can get something like reduction of mass. In the bosonic case, it was increase of mass. As temperature grows, mass could increase. Okay, it was a combination of various effects, but in principle, you know, when we discuss chiral symmetry restoration, in the high temperature phase, the mass grows as a function of temperature. Here, it will be reduced. Okay, and you have the same idea. Maybe you can also discuss chiral symmetry restoration in the framework of the NGL model. Yeah? This is the idea. Né? How to do this? Now, first of all, you have to write down a chirally symmetric version of the NJL model. Né? Okay, what is the first thing? The mass term violates chiral symmetry. Né? Remember that this psi bar psi, when you write this in terms of chiral projection operators, né? P, R, L. We did all this before, né? So I just remind you, this was a chiral projector, né? And then you can introduce right and left-handed components of psi by projecting psi with these projection operators. But when you do this calculation, we did this, I think, when we discussed the standard model of weak interactions, you see that psi bar psi is actually a term which mixes right with left. If you don't believe me, look it up in the script. So the mass term violates chiral symmetry. So m psi bar psi in the Dirac Lagrangian violates chiral symmetry. No problem. Let's just set m to 0. Then at least the kinetic term is chirally symmetric. Kinetic term, or free L0, is chirally symmetric. Good. Fine. Then because the kinetic term had an extra gamma, mu matrix in the del slash, which actually leads to the fact that, no? If I write psi bar I del slash psi, this is actually psi bar left I del slash psi left plus psi bar right I del slash psi right. This is what we discussed in the standard model. Né? When you introduce neutrinos and electrons, which left and right-handed electrons. Né? So the only thing that we still need to make chirally symmetric is the interaction term, psi bar psi squared. This is not chirally symmetric, as you see. Né? When you square this, you will still get mixtures of right and left-handed. If I square this, I get right-left squared plus 2 times right-left, left-right, plus psi-left, psi-right squared. Chiral transformations turn left into right. If you turn left, sorry, chiral transformations in the left and right-handed sector separately mix this guy and this guy. Yeah? So if I do a transformation in the chiral group, remember that now you also need flavor, né, in order to discuss this. So, you know, you have chiral symmetry was, remember the bosonic case, was basically U, N, F, left cross U, N, F, right. And what you need to do is you have to rotate left-handed flavors and right-handed flavors separately. And this term violates this, because if you start to rotate left-handed, there will be phase factors which are not compensated by right-handed. Here it's okay. This term is okay, right? Because if I rotate left, here's the psi bar, that the rotation is reversed by the bar, complex conjugation. So here, this thing here will be chirally symmetric. And if you rotate right-handed, you will also get compensation. So this term is chirally symmetric, but these terms not. These terms violate chiral symmetry. So the way to repair this, to restore chiral symmetry, is by adding a term to the interaction, another four-point interaction term. So add another four-point interaction. And you will see that if you choose this properly, you can restore chiral symmetry. Or you can actually write down a model which is chirally symmetric. So we have to add something. The idea is to add something where this cancels. That's the idea. So I will simply write this down for you. This is psi bar I gamma 5 psi. Of course, you can also do other tricks. This is actually for one flavor. If I want to increase the number of flavors, I have to add an isospin tau here. But we don't need to make it too complicated. So I'll show you that this does the trick. Because if you now compute this guy here, then you do the decomposition in terms of projection operator. So you have psi bar, which is actually psi right, PL, right? When you bar this, there was always a difference, plus psi left bar PR. Then you have the I gamma 5. The I can pull out. I don't need to carry this along. And then psi was actually the other way. This was PR psi R plus PL psi L, as you expect. This is how you can do this, using the idempotency of the projection operators. So this is pi R squared equals pi R PR, and PL squared equals PL. And then you multiply out, and you use the fact that PL gamma 5 is actually 1 minus gamma 5 over 2 gamma 5 is actually gamma 5 minus 1 over 2, because gamma 5 squared is 1, which is minus PL. For PR, gamma 5, you get just PR back. So if I multiply this in, then I get I minus psi bar R. And of course, now you can also absorb the PL again in psi bar R. And here you get plus psi L. And here you get psi R plus psi L. And then you multiply this out. So this I is minus psi bar R psi R minus psi bar R psi L plus psi L psi R plus psi, sorry, there's a bar missing, L psi L. OK. This is not correct. Sorry, I have to retain the L here and the R here. Otherwise, I don't see which terms vanish. Sorry about this. I already told Laurin I'm a little bit beside myself today, but probably there was just too long a trip yesterday to Bielefeld and back. So I'm still a little bit sleepy. So we have to keep the projection operators. Otherwise, you don't see the PL, PR equals 0 thing. So you see that this PL multiplying psi R is vanishing. So only the mixed term survives, but this now with a difference in sign with respect to the first term. Jesus. So this guy gives something, and this guy gives something. This guy gives something, and this guy gives something. Oh, okay. Now we have it. Fine. So this is this thing, and now I need to square this and add it to this guy here. So this guy we had up there, I just copy it. This is this first term. Okay. And now I add the square of the second term. I squared is minus 1. So I get minus from the I squared, and then I get the square of this. The minus cancels when I square it, which cancels this guy. And I get minus the square of this guy, which cancels this guy. And then I get the mixed term, which is minus 2 times. Together with this, it's plus 2 times. And the mixed term is actually the same as this guy over there. So in total, you have 4 times this guy here. And I already told you that this term is symmetric. This is chirally symmetric. Because when you start to rotate psi L here, then the rotation is compensated by the inverse rotation of psi bar L. And if you rotate psi R, it's compensated by the inverse rotation of psi bar r. So this is chirally symmetric. Fantastic. Good. And now we can write down my chirally symmetric L, which is the kinetic term for the left, the kinetic term for the right, no mass term, because this would destroy chiral symmetry. And then, here I choose to write it in a somewhat symmetric form, but it's equivalent. You can do this as you want. This is how it looks like. This is my symmetric NJL model. Good, okay. And now you start to write down gap equations again for the mass and so forth. We will not do this too explicitly now, because I don't want to spend too much time on this. If you like, you can do this. You can write down a gap equation from 0 equals del gamma del s. Of course, you can do left and right-handed s's, but this thing is so symmetric, this theory, that you will get the same gap equation. So eventually, you will get a gap equation. And then this will look like follows. M equals, little m is 0. Then you get a coefficient, some number, you have to compute this, g times m. And then you will get the vacuum term, which we regularize. And then you will get minus the thermal contribution, which you have to compute numerically. Okay? This is how this thing will look like. And you see, you can actually even divide out this. 1 equals the right-hand side. And you see, this is positive, so this basically increases the mass. This is negative, this decreases the mass. And for any temperature, you have to solve this. So you have to make sure that the right-hand side becomes 1. So fix the temperature, and then there's also an m here. Of course, it's not independent of m, otherwise doesn't make any sense. The M sits here in the dispersion relation. So for any temperature, choose an M so that the right hand, and of course for any given value of G and lambda you have to fix somehow. Yeah? For any temperature, make sure that this is fulfilled. Of course, you can already guess zero chemical potential, temperature equals zero. This thing is zero, so you have to make sure that there's actually a relation between G and lambdas. Yeah? So you can fix this, and then you can start to increase the temperature and see how the zero temperature, zero temperature mass was can be non-zero as a solution of this gap equation. Then chiral symmetry would be broken, and then you finally restore temperature by restore symmetry by increasing temperature. Okay, so let me write this down somewhat more structured way. Now, a lot of words and not so many formulas, but in principle, it's enough to understand this qualitatively. Okay, so first observation was vacuum fluctuations generate mass because the right-hand side is positive. Okay, but this means chiral symmetry is spontaneously broken, or we actually say in this context, dynamically broken. Dynamically because this interaction mechanism that is hiding behind this gap equation, there was this four-point, this double bubble diagram, there was an interaction. So this interaction, in the vacuum, it actually leads to dynamical chiral symmetry breaking. It's dynamically broken. Okay. At T equals zero in the vacuum, if you like. So, and this is the same as in QCD, by the way, no? As in the theory of the strong interaction, where the mass generation comes from gluonic fluctuations. So in QCD, you also break chiral symmetry in the vacuum. The quarks become effectively massive. And then as temperature is increased, you restore this again. So sometimes because of this analogy, instead of the O4 model, you can also use this NJL model to study this symmetry breaking and restoration in QCD in terms of the simpler NJL model, because there are no gluons here. No? So use NJL model as effective model for QCD. No? To study chiral symmetry breaking and restoration. At non-zero temperature. Na gut, okay. So this was one comment. So now let's increase the temperature. So this dynamically generated mass will decrease on account of thermal fluctuations. Yeah? So T non-zero, dynamically generated mass decreases because of the opposite sign in front of the thermal term. So what will happen is the following. So I show you some plot, but you can also look it up in the literature. So here's M in MeV, let's say, T in MeV. Then at zero temperature, you have some zero temperature mass, M0, which if you adjust the parameters, G and lambda squared, can be of the order of 400 MeV, if you like. And then you increase the temperature, the fluctuations kick in. The solution of the fixed point equation basically tells you the mass has to decrease, and then at some temperature on the order of 200 MeV, you get symmetry restoration, and that's it. So this is dynamical symmetry breaking, dynamical chiral symmetry breaking. And here you get restoration. This is the restoration of chiral symmetry. And this is very similar to this O4 model, except we don't have a one-point function or an expectation value for the field. We just have the mass as order parameter. The mass, M, is the order parameter for this phase transition. And this is, as you can see, a second order phase transition. This is good, no? I mean, this is something that we expect to happen in QCD for at least if the flavor number is not larger than 2. Naja, and of course you can beef this model up so that you have more than one flavor, you have 2 flavors or 3 or 4 flavors. You can also see that the symmetry restoration pattern is the same as in QCD, when you make this model as similar to QCD as possible. Okay, and yeah, this plot, I will include it in the script, but here I can show it. But this is from my colleague Michael Buballa from Darmstadt. He wrote a physics report some time ago, number 407, 2005, and this is figure 2.7, where you can see this, how this looks like. Okay. So, final comment. Remember that the thermal and vacuum fluctuations came from this expression here. This is what we started to compute. This had a vacuum part, which was the vacuum fluctuation, had a thermal part, and this is in principle nothing but the trace of S. So this momentum space in space-time, it would be SXX or 0 argument, local term. And if you look at this more carefully, this is actually the vacuum expectation value of psi bar psi. Not vacuum, the expectation value of psi bar psi. Because when you write this in terms of a functional integral, then you see that, and of course the trace means now the indices are, the Dirac indices are traced over, alpha, alpha. When you write this down, then this was psi bar psi, and then e to the blah blah blah. Doing this integration means you get the alpha beta component of S, and then you trace over this. If you write this as alpha beta, this averaging over Grassmann variables divided by the same thing without this is precisely this S alpha beta. Okay. So there's a non-vanishing vacuum. So if this tadpole does not vanish, so you have a non-vanishing condensate of psi bar psi. non-vanishing condensate psi bar psi. This is the terminology. So basically, you condense pairs of psis and psi bars. If this is non-zero. And of course, it's non-zero if you look at the gap equation. Where do we have it? Here, no? This thing is non-zero, means M is non-zero. So non-zero condensate means non-zero M, because that's basically what generates the M. So in principle, instead of this as order parameter, you can also use psi bar psi as order parameter. Yeah? M or psi bar psi. And that's why this is sometimes called chiral condensate. Yeah? And then we are actually in the same terminology as in the O4 model. In the O4 model, this was just a one-point function. In the NGL model, it's this psi bar psi. So I told you at the beginning that one-point function psi or psi bar vanishes, but this two-point function does not need to vanish because it's C number. It's a C number. So this can have a non-vanishing expectation value. And now we found that, at least in the simple model and in the approximation we study, it is the same as the one-point function in the O4 model. So this two-point function here is equivalent to the one-point function in the scalar case. Okay. Or it is the mass, no? Because there's this gap equation for the mass which relates M to psi bar psi. Okay. Good. So, any questions so far? Then we can go to the next step. Okay, so we understand that there is some, in this formalism, this 2pi formalism, there is a way to generate non-vanishing expectation values for psi bar psi, right? And the analogy, yeah, so and the psi bar psi is basically something like a dynamically generated mass, okay? Then you can study symmetry breaking and restoration in terms of the temperature dependence of M or of psi bar psi. Okay, good. And in principle, this means a condensate of fermions and antifermions, no? Fermion-antifermion pairs. Okay. This is what this psi bar psi means in physical terms. And now the question is, can you also condense fermion-fermion pairs, or antifermion-antifermion pairs? So instead of psi bar psi, you have psi psi. Okay, you say, sounds funny, but if I put the Dirac indices correctly, maybe it works. Although psi, if it's the same psi, then the Grassmann integration, Grassmann properties already tell you that this is zero. Né? So if this is psi alpha, this is zero. Né? Psi alpha squared is zero if this is a Grassmann valued variable. But while alpha doesn't need to be alpha, the Dirac indices on these spinors don't need to be the same. You could take alpha and beta. Né? And then it works, né? Because these are different Grassmann valued variables. Okay, and then maybe you remember all what you have heard about superfluidity and superconductivity, that people talk about condensates of Cooper pairs, where actually you have two electrons which condense in the ground state. You say, there must be a connection. And this is what I'm going to explain to you now, in the same formalism. So you don't need a full... don't need to listen to a full semester of superconductivity or superfluidity course. You can just do it with me in 2 hours. It's the same. Basically, everything that is BCS theory is condensed in this very interesting or short summary of how to discuss this phenomenon of Cooper pair condensation in in the condensed matter physics. Okay, and it can be done with the NGL model. Okay, it's relativistic. You can also do it relativistically. Why not? Electrons are, if the chemical potential is very large, then electrons are relativistic, and then you can do this. So this is chapter 7. Super. The difference between this, I will hopefully also explain. What is superfluidity and superconductivity? Actually, I will only discuss superfluidity in a strict sense, but you will see how this, what the difference is. I will try to explain this. So, as I said, the motivation is the Cooper pair condensation that you have heard about in condensed matter physics. What is this? It actually means that Cooper pairs are formed from two electrons. Ne? Two electrons form bound state. It's not really bound state, but it's somehow a correlation between two electrons because of an attractive interaction. Okay. But in principle, the BCS theory, ne, you have heard about this, you do the normal vacuum, you have to transform into a vacuum where you have a Cooper pair condensate. Ne? So the ground state, and usually you do this with Bogoliubov transformations. In the language of second quantization, you introduce Bogoliubov transformations. You don't need to do this. This is also, you can also do it in this functional formalism where it's much more elegant. To my taste. So the new ground state has actually a Cooper pair condensate. This is a Cooper pair condensate. Of course, two electrons. A Cooper pair is a bosonic state. You can easily condense them somehow in the ground state. But in essence, it means you can always pull an electron out of the vacuum at no expense or send one in. Yeah, so the particle number in that sense is no longer conserved. And these are fermion, this is a fermion-fermion condensate, not fermion-antifermion, like in the previous example. Fermion-fermion condensate, or condensate of fermion-fermion pairs. Let me write it this way. Of fermion-fermion pairs. Pairs of two fermions. Okay. So you expect that somehow the expectation value of psi is non-zero. Okay. Before we had psi bar psi non-zero. Now we have psi zero. So, in essence, as I said, it is always possible to take a fermion or an antifermion, doesn't matter, out of the condensate. So suppose you have an ordinary propagation of fermions. Let's say from y to x. You would write down a propagator like this. And this would be something like psi bar x psi of y. Ne? Okay. Expectation value, as we just discussed here. So if you can always send a fermion into the condensate and pull another one out, you could imagine that the fermion goes in and is replaced by another fermion from the condensate. So there is the possibility of a so-called anomalous propagation. And this, this can also be done in a graphical language. So I suppose, so here's the condensate somehow, yeah, and then you can do it like this between y and x. So there's a fermion coming out, but there's another fermion coming out. It's not a fermion going in and coming out again, but there's another fermion coming out in essence. And this means you would have an non-vanishing expectation value of, yeah, okay. Now it's a notation. The question how you do this notationally, I think this should be psi bar x, psi bar y. No? Because the arrow points onto the point where it goes out. No? So here this goes out, this must be a psi bar. But of course, you can also do it the other way. No? You can send it in and send it in. And this should be psi of x, psi of y. No? And somehow here, this blob means there is the condensate where you can always provide yourself with a psi bar or a psi. And then, of course, the question is whether, in this example, we saw that psi bar x psi of x condenses has a non-vanishing vacuum expectation value. The question is whether psi bar of x, and or psi of x has a non-vanishing expectation value. But we have to allow, first of all, we have to allow for this anomalous propagation. Okay, this is the idea. Of course, now we have to put all this into mathematical terms. So now, no longer hand-waving, as I did when I explained the symmetry restoration in the NJL model. Now we have to really be a little bit more careful, because you don't know the, at least I did not explain to you the mathematical framework how to discuss this. This will come now. And this is also due to Nambu. And because, of course, he knew all this condensed matter stuff. Okay? And that's why he transferred this knowledge to the phenomenon of symmetry restoration in QCD in the simple model, which bears his name. But I think the breakthrough in the mathematical formalism, and not in terms of these second quantized language that Bardeen, Cooper, and Schrieffer used, is due to some Russians. No? So the Russian who actually probably did this first was Gorkov. Okay, that's why what I present now is due to Nambu and Gorkov. Okay, so you have to introduce the charge conjugate Dirac spinor. Why you want to do this will become obvious in a moment. But let's first define this guy. We call this psi c. And then you remember your charge conjugation discussion from advanced quantum mechanics. So there must be something like a charge conjugation matrix. And this will act on psi bar transpose. And c is I gamma 2 gamma 0. This is the charge conjugation matrix. OK. Why is it like this? Because charge conjugation, as you remember, turns particles into antiparticles, right? So, of course, this matrix cannot do it. You have to do it with the spinors. So this is in principle, this has, of course, particle and antiparticle components. But psi bar are the particle and antiparticle components are reversed with respect to psi, okay? So you already expect by the barring that this psi c thing will reverse properties of particles and antiparticles. And then you just have, with this matrix, you have to make sure that you also flip upper and lower components of the Dirac spinors. And the D is necessary because the psi bar is actually a row spinor, but this thing you want to have, you want this to be a column spinner, okay? So this is just a definition. I just motivated to you why, how this comes about. Okay, then you can bar this, psi c bar, and then you compute how this looks like. First of all, the definition of the bar means it's delta gamma zero. No? This is what the bar does. And now you have to delta this guy here. So this is c psi bar t delta gamma zero. Okay. So now we have to resolve the delta. So this means it is transpose delta means just star, no? Because delta means star, complex conjugation, and transposition. So this, the transposition here actually compensates for the transposition here. So you just have a psi bar star c c delta, sorry, c delta, and then gamma zero. This is what happens when you dagger this here. So transposition always means also reverse the order of factors. So now the psi bar comes first. And then you have to know that the C guy here, so C inverse and C dagger and C transpose, you can compute all this stuff here. This is always minus C. This is something that we need to know. You can check. I think if we discussed the C, then this was also mentioned at some point. Otherwise, you just check from the definition. I gamma 2 gamma 0 can be easily checked that this holds. Okay, so now I have to star psi bar. That means, of course, I have psi delta gamma 0 star. No? This is this guy. The C delta here, naja. What do? I write it out. I don't use this at the moment. I just write it out, what it is. It is this guy daggered. So the dagger means I goes to minus I. And then reverse the order of factors. So gamma 0 dagger. But, you know, in our convention, this is actually in the Dirac convention of the Dirac matrices. In the Dirac convention, gamma 0 is real. So it's even Hermitian, so gamma 0 is gamma 0 dagger, so I can omit the dagger here, and then it's gamma 2 dagger. No? This is the last thing, and then there's another gamma 0 here. Okay, good. Fine. And then you remember that, so again, dagger star means it's just transposition, no? Because the complex conjugation in the dagger is compensated by the complex conjugation. So this is just psi t. Gamma 0 is real. Forget about this. Then I have minus I. And then I have gamma 0, gamma 2 dagger, gamma 0. And you also remember that this guy here is actually gamma 2. No? Because there's this identity. This is always gamma mu. No? You can check this for all. For every mu, you can check this. Okay, so you have minus I psi t gamma 0, gamma 2. Naja, and then you massage this a bit. No? This anti-commutes, this compensates this guy here, the minus sign in front of the I. And then you see this is plus I gamma 2 gamma 0, but it was just c. No? So this is psi tc. Aha, good. So now we have everything. We know how to obtain the charge conjugate spinor and the Dirac adjoint charge conjugate spinor from the normal spinors. And also here, ne, the same holds. The bar means it should be a rho spinor that is achieved by the transposition on the psi, and the c, again, makes sure that you actually really charge conjugate what you have in mind. Okay, good. You can also invert this. This will also be helpful. So let's invert this stuff. So from here, I can also compute psi bar, which is basically nothing but C inverse psi C and then T. Ne? If I multiply with C inverse from the left, and then transpose, you see that this holds. And then, this is psi C transposition. C inverse transposition is actually by this here. Inverse and transposition is the same operation and gives you C. I can also replace psi by solving this stuff here. Né? So this is basically nothing but from the right with C inverse. So it's psi C bar C inverse and then transposition in order to resolve the transposition there. And then, of course, this is C psi C bar transpose. Okay, good. So now, this means that my L0, which is psi bar, I del slash. Okay, now let me also introduce the chemical potential. Why? Because you know that Cooper pair condensation only occurs near the Fermi surface, so you need a Fermi surface for this to study. So let's introduce a Fermi surface, a Fermi energy by the chemical potential. And you will also see in a moment that charge conjugation will really turn particles with plus mu into antiparticles with minus mu. This will come out when we now apply the charge conjugation. Okay, so let me write this in terms of the charge conjugate spinors. I just read off that this is psi C transpose C, and then this comes again, I del slash plus mu gamma 0 minus m. And this guy is C psi C bar T. Okay. And now something that you do for homework, as always there's a homework problem, homework. C gamma mu C is actually gamma mu transpose, which you need now, no? Because here the gamma mu is between two C's. So if I use this, I get psi C transpose I del slash. And the slash now actually needs to be transposed. So let me indicate it like this. But this means nothing but gamma mu transpose del mu. And del mu still acts to the right. Okay, plus mu gamma 0 transpose my. Aha, and here I have minus m, but I have c times c squared. So what is c squared? This is actually minus c inverse, right? This is minus 1. Okay, so it's plus m psi c bar transpose. Okay. Now let me pull the transposition out. Okay? So this you do as usual. Né? You just basically write the T outside here, which when you put it in, you reverse all the factors. Yeah. So this comes now here. This is psi C bar. This transposition here, so this T basically T's all the stuff in the middle. So I would just write the stuff without T. However, this guy acted on the bar. So the partial derivative actually needs to act on the left. This is not reversed by transposition. And one more thing you have to remember, in principle, what was here? No? There was basically a Grassmann-valued spinner with index alpha, and here was a Grassmann-valued spinner with index, at the end of the day, all the indices match up, beta, but sum over alpha. Here was alpha beta, and then sum alpha beta. But when you write it in this form, what you did was actually you commuted by transposition, you commuted to the Grassmann variables with each other, and they anti-commute. So you for Grassmann variables, you have to be careful about the transposition. If you have two of them and you reverse the order by transposition, take account of the minus sign. Anti-commutation of Grassmann variables. Okay. Yeah, and the final step is, of course, this was basically the L0, but of course in the theory there is always the action. So it's always another space-time integration. And then you can do integration by parts. So integration by parts to shuffle the del slash to the other side. This del slash to left can be by integration by parts pulled to the right, acting on the psi c, which reverses this sign here. So it's psi c I del slash now to the right. So this I don't indicate. But here, of course, this minus sign, there's no integration by parts. So it's minus gamma 0 minus m psi c. And then in principle, the whole thing still t. But what is inside here now is saturated in all indices. This is two Grassmann variables, which are C numbers. So this whole thing here is a number. So here you can also just forget about this T. So this was a little bit of a complicated way to calculate the transposition of something. If I had written it down in indices without T's, it would have been maybe easier to see that you can now just let it leave off the T's and works out fine. The main thing that you should see is, as compared to before, if I write this Lagrangian in terms of charge conjugate fields, you see it looks the same. Particles and antiparticles have the same properties. They only differ in the sign of the chemical potential. Okay? And on Friday, I will tell you how to use this to discuss superfluidity. Okay? So, see you on Friday.